This episode of 1 MHz is brought to you by Navis Pack and Ship. When you need to safely send or receive computers, art, electronics, or other hard-to-ship items, go Navis to solve your shipping problems at GONAVIS.com. From Toronto, Canada, this is 1 MHz, an Apple II podcast. In this episode, the secret hidden song title will be Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. So I'll try to sneak it in and you try to spot it.
Sharing information on the internet is profoundly changing how we communicate. In the near future, using the internet will be as common as using telephone services we have today. In some cases, I suspect we'll hardly even notice when we're online.
And welcome back to 1 MHz. Been a while, huh, kids? Been at least, what, 2 or 3 weeks since my last show? Okay, maybe I'm rounding. If in the meantime you have missed me, hopefully you have been subscribing to the new Apple podcast on the block, run by Ken and Mike. It's called Open Apple, and it's really good. It's a monthly show. There have been 3 episodes so far. If you are a subscriber to this show, then you definitely should be subscribing to that one. Lots of info, great banter, really, really interesting. You can find that show at open-apple.net, and it's great to have another Apple II related podcast out there. The more info and the more different voices, the better, I think. Fantastic new show. Myself, I have been involved in a couple of other podcasts, one of which I guess is one of the reasons why it's taken me so long to get back to this. I've been doing a movie review show, comes out every Wednesday, called Double Take, also available on the monsterfeet.com site. But in more retro computer related news, I've been a fairly regular-ish panelist on another new podcast called the Retro Computing Roundtable. It's hosted by David Grealish, and it's had a number of amazing panelists on it. I've been very lucky to be involved. It's really fun. It's a much longer show, like an hour and a half kind of. But it's, if you're interested in retro computer stuff, I strongly recommend it. It's just like a group of guys sitting around just sort of talking and bantering about the retro computer related news of the day. Really, really been fun to be involved with. The format will be changing for upcoming episodes. And myself and Earl Evans, along with David, will be the regular panelists going forward, sort of sharing the hosting duties. So I'm really looking forward to that. And that's going to come out on a every 4 week schedule. So I think we have another one being recorded tomorrow. So looking forward to it. So if you're interested in retro computing, Apple or otherwise, there have been lots of podcasts to tide you over in the, again, 2 or 3 weeks at most since I last did a show. And so what is new in the Apple II world? Well, of course, the big news is the announcement of open registration for this year's Kansas Fest. Yes, it is happening again. It's going to take place from July 19th through 24th, I think. It's about $365 to go, and honestly, worth every penny. I have been once, and it was just the best experience. If you are a listener to this podcast, then you have an interest in Apple IIs. And honestly, there is no place you could go that would be more fun and more filled with Apple II-ness than Kansas Fest. There is even a way to get $25 off your registration this year by, I'm a little vague on how it works. I think you have to buddy up with somebody who's a veteran of going. So somebody who's gone before can urge you to go, and you both put your names on the registration and you both save $25. So isn't that a good reason? Come on, find somebody who's already gone, urge them to buddy up with you and hit Kansas Fest for the first time this year. One of the things that's going to happen at this year's show that I personally find very interesting is Vince Briel, who is famous for his vintage computer kits, the Apple I kit he has and the Altair kit, will be conducting a hands-on session on building a version of his new A2 MP3 card. And it's a card that plugs into a vintage Apple II, has a USB port, and you can plug in a thumb drive filled with MP3s, and your Apple II can play the MP3s. So itself a very cool card, and adds a great bit of functionality to an Apple II. And what a great way to introduce you to card building for an Apple II, to get soldering help and that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in hardware design or just dabbling or what have you, honestly, I cannot think of a better way to begin than to take one of these sessions with Vince. I haven't done one before. I'm really looking forward to doing this one, which is my hint to say, yes, this year I'm going back to Kansas Fest. Woohoo! And everything I've heard about the way Vince runs these sessions is it is absolutely the best way to get an introduction to this sort of hands-on hardware work. So absolutely looks like one of the must-do things at this year's must-attend event. Oh, and like the A2 MP3 card, in other news related to things that add functionality to your vintage Apple II setup, Ewan Wanup has announced that Nifty Spell, which is his spell-checking NDA, has been now reclassified as freeware. So fantastic. If you have an Apple II 2GS setup, then you're definitely going to want to grab this. So now there's spell-checking available freely for open text edit documents and that sort of thing. It's just an amazing thing for Ewan to have done, to give it out to the Apple II world just as a way of making the community better. So well done him. Really, I am delighted to be reporting that news. Fantastic. And let's see, what else is new? Oh, you know, speaking of giving out to the community, the Canadian poet B.P. Nichol, who passed away a number of years ago, back in 1983 and 84, he created a series of Apple II poems, not poems about Apple IIs, but rather poetry created on and to be displayed upon an Apple IIe. It was a series of poems called First Screening, and the original version, the original run, I guess, was also distributed as signed floppy disks and some accompanying printed material. But as the Apple II disappeared from the mainstream, it became very difficult for people to get access to this poetry, and HyperCard stacks were created to recreate the experience of the poetry. That extended its shelf life, extended its availability for a number of years. But of course, then Apple started charging for HyperCard, and quite a bit actually, and then eventually canceled it. So once again, the poems became pretty much impossible to get a hold of. In fantastic news, the poetry has been re-released. There's the original disk images, so you can grab those. The original HyperCard stacks have also been released, and so you can download those. And both of those are fantastic ways to get access to the poetry, say, through an emulator. But also, a QuickTime movie of the running of the poems has been released, and so that's an easier way to see it through any modern video program. And additionally, a JavaScript has been created that presents the poems again in their original form, and it's a very kinetic form. And so it's just amazing that this poetry that, to me as a Canadian, I'm delighted that a relatively famous Canadian's work is not just to be lost, but it's amazing and I think important that these works of early kinetic and computer-based art are finding ways to live on, because they are, unfortunately, very ephemeral media that they're on. I have been thinking about this sort of... Before I go on and start to ramble, as I do, I should point out that all the stuff I've been talking about so far, including this poetry, I'll have links to everything in the show notes. So if you want to grab his poetry, or you want to find these podcasts I've been talking about, or that sort of thing, just head on over to monsterfeet.com, and the links, they'll hook you up. So anyway, with the poetry, it's had me thinking again about something that I do think about quite a bit, which is the impact on our culture in a broad sense, and on my ability to play neat games in a narrow sense, on of the fact that the medium of this art, of computers, is ephemeral. It just disappears. It degrades. The disks themselves eventually just dissolve and stop working. The hardware stops working or is unavailable, or you can have a 2GS but you can't find a monitor for it or can't use it on a modern computer, or the disk drives stop working. And all of that makes so much of what we produce as a culture able to be just vanished. Like, it just goes away in a weird sort of way. Something created hundreds or thousands of years ago on paper or in stone is so much more likely to be around 100 years from now than almost anything else we're making now, if we don't take care to try to preserve it in a longer format. And that itself is a much more difficult task than one might think. And I think this task, though, is made all the more difficult by the heaps of ridiculous digital rights management and proprietary formats we throw at things. And while I am quite an anti-copyright fellow myself, even if we grant the idea that copyright is a good and important and all wonderful thing, and maybe everybody benefits from it, and I could, in this, like many things, be wrong, but it's worrisome to me that the implementation of copyright nowadays has been through the use of things that make that copying difficult, if not impossible. And with the death of original media can make the life of something that should be considered art a short-lived one. And I worry about that the computer games and computer poetry and so many things that we have no idea what their value will be in the future, but they are now affecting our culture and influencing us in the ways that books and movies and poetry and song and campfire stories and stuff have for so long. And I worry about these things being lost when they don't need to be. And I have no solutions, but it is something that I think about. If you can solve this problem, I, for one, will appreciate it. And so go to it, would you?
Using an Apple II is very easy. The only hard part is getting your kid away from it. You see, Apples are the leading computers in schools, so even though you bought it to help you work at home, your kid will want to use it for his own homework. Of course, if all else fails, there's one last thing you can try. Get him an Apple of his own.
So let's talk about a game. I'm going to review it twice now because the second time I played it through, or when I finished it rather, I had a completely different experience than when I started off. It is called In Search of the Most Amazing Thing by Tom Snyder Productions. Came out mid-80s, I think 84, 83? 83, according to the back of the box. It's a kid's game, ages 10 to adult, and I'm in that range. So, and it is something that is very beloved by a lot of people, according to the internet reviews I was reading. People have written at length about how much they loved this game and how frequently they played it as kids. There's a lot of people on the internet talking about this being among their favorite games of all time and that sort of stuff. So I was very, very intrigued to grab myself a copy off eBay and play it. It is a Spinnaker game, which means it comes in a big white plastic snapper case. As an aside, do you ever notice how when new mediums come out, music and movie and that kind of stuff, new formats, they are often packaged in bigger packaging than they need to be at first? Like when CDs came out and were replacing records from CDs, they weren't first published in just the jewel cases like they are today. They came in these big, big paper sleeves, I guess, to give you more album art and to make them stand up more against the large size of a record. But then really just open up the paper sleeve and recycle it, and you're just left with the jewel case. Same thing with software. Software used to come in much larger boxes than it does now, and software just seems to keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller until now it's just down to a CD, or really it's down to no packaging at all, is how I get most of my software nowadays. Same thing was with video cassettes. I don't know if you're old enough to remember VHS tapes, but if you listen to this podcast, you probably are. They, at first, didn't come in just tight-fitting paper sleeves the way they did at the end, or now, even now. Instead, they were first published in larger snap together plastic cases, little sort of mini plastic binders that the cassette would sit in the middle. Spinnaker software is published in the same sort of material, thick plastic snapper case, but instead of being the shape of a large VHS cassette, it's square, but same sort of material. Holding it absolutely reminds me of early VHS tapes. So on the front of the box, it says "In Search of the Most Amazing Thing" by Tom Snyder Productions. It's got a big colorful picture. The main object in the picture is sort of it's something called a B-liner, but it's, imagine a lunar lander module. So it's one of those, but extruding from the top of it is a very colorful balloon. It's like a hot air balloon attached to a lunar lander module. There's a couple of people in front of it, a guy and a girl in spacesuits. There, it's near a colorful town, and then in the clouds are three heads looking at you, and they're alien heads, sort of in the insectoid shape. And it says, "Spinnaker, we make learning fun." It's for the Apple II. "Demonstrator mode included on the disc." And there's a little blurb that says, "The most amazing thing is out there somewhere, but it won't be easy to find it. But even when you do, finding it again will be a brand new challenge." Apple II, 48K disc drive. And on the back, it says, it's got a couple of screenshots, same white red and white stripes of the Spinnaker logo on the bottom. And on the top, it says, "In Search of the Most Amazing Thing. The most amazing thing is out there somewhere. Finding it won't be easy. But relax. You'll have the help of your Uncle Smoke Bailey. He'll give you a B-liner, sort of a cross between a hot air balloon and a dune buggy, to use on your journey. You'll have to learn how to fly the B-liner and navigate it through storms and fog. But before you do anything, you'll have to talk to Smoke. He'll tell you about the Mire people and the strange language they speak. He'll also tell you about the dangers of Mire crabs and how to get fuel for the B-liner. You'll visit the Metallican auction, where you'll trade with the aliens for valuable chips. You'll use these chips to buy the things you'll need for your trip. Plus, you'll learn how to fly over a planet using your jetpack. The most amazing thing holds great powers, but it will take great skill, persistence, and imagination to find it. The game includes Jim Moreau's new novel, The Adventures of Smoke Bailey, so you can have hours of fun playing the game or reading the book. In Search of the Most Amazing Thing was written by Tom Snyder, educator and author of the Snooper Troopers detective series." And it talks about the educational value and what's interesting is the Snooper Troopers, mentioning that, I have one or two of the games from that series as well that I have picked up. So at some point in a future episode, maybe I'll talk about one of those. Now, opening this up, this big white case, my copy came with a disc. I got this off eBay, came with a disc, came with a little instruction manual, came with a Spinnaker catalog, came with a warranty card, but did not come with Jim Moreau's novel, The Adventures of Smoke Bailey. It was not complete. Oh, auction listing, you lied to me, but it was such a long period between me getting it and me opening it up that really couldn't go back. So what a shame. Didn't have it, didn't think it would matter. I was wrong. So I decided to dive in and just play the game, even without the little novella. The game itself was dull. Holy cow, I couldn't understand why so many people seem to think this is such a great game. I'll tell you a bit about how you play it. It's divided really into two parts. There's the part of the game that takes place in the city of Metallica. It has nothing to do with the band, and it's too bad because the city is dull. And then there's the part of the game that takes place outside on the rest of the planet. So in the city of Metallica, the city itself is sort of built around an elevator shaft. At the very top is your Uncle Smoke Bailey, his place. He's sort of a blob with a broken leg, sitting on the ground. It's, you know, really not very good graphics here. Then there's the elevator shaft that you can very slowly take down to two other levels, one of which is a store where you can buy things to equip your B-liner, and one of which is the auction level. Now, Smoke Bailey, your uncle, once you wake him up, which you have to do slowly, for some reason he gets mad at you, then he'll give you an item. And this is the first part where I could see how kids would like this, because you get a very random item. Every time he gives you an item, it's something completely ridiculous and way out there. And that's sort of neat. So you take your item slowly down to the auction level, where a bunch of these bug-headed alien things are waiting to buy stuff. You can offer it up for sale. First, though, you can feel out the room a little bit, find out sort of how they would value this item. So what you can do is propose a price, and then they'll respond. And some of them might say like, oh, that sounds like a great bargain. Others might say, oh, I think I could do better. And some might say something like, oh, I would never bid on it at that level. So once you sort of have felt out the room and you think of a price that you might be able to sort of offer it up for, you know, offer it up for sale, try to get a buyer, and then you get your chips in return for your for the object. You take the chips up to the store level. The store level is really the example of the worst graphics in the game. On the left and the right are just pink blocks. And I guess those are supposed to represent aisles or something, but it really just looks like curtains or something. It's terrible. And even for the time, these are really not, these aren't graphics that anybody put a lot of effort into, or at least they didn't have artistic skill. It's very disappointing. But you can buy items there. But half the items are obviously useful, things like weather gauges and fuel gauges and stuff. And about half the items are probably not useful, things like a spare elevator button. So it's fairly easy to tell which items you should be buying. Once you buy a few items and you get bored of the city, you can hop into your beeliner and then start to investigate the planet at large and begin your search for the most amazing thing. And you sort of have to know on your own that that's what you're going to go do. So the beeliner can travel in two different ways, either along the ground, like, as it says, it's sort of like a dune buggy. And that's the simplest way to travel because you can go in any direction you want. But it's a little more dangerous because these crab things can get you and they can temporarily paralyze you and slow you down. Or you can travel by balloon, which is much faster, but a little more difficult because you have to go by dead reckoning and you're at the mercy of the winds. And that's sort of fun because you first have to look at the map of the winds and figure out what direction the wind is going at different altitudes and then think, okay, I will raise myself up to a given altitude and that should hopefully put me so far along the direction that I want to go to, say, the grid that you want to go investigate. Once you're in an area that you want to investigate, you can do an EVA, you pop out on your jetpack, you can fly around a bit. It's also very slow, a little difficult to control, and you can investigate, try to find things. You can interact with different tribes of these aliens, or I guess maybe you're the alien, it's their planet. They're shy, and so the way they speak is with bent antenna, sort of a version of semaphore, and that's kind of fun. You have to work out the code for the way different tribes speak, and you'll learn to read their semaphore codes from their bent antenna, and I like that bit. You create things called musics, M-U-S-I-X. You draw out a song, basically, and then it plays and you get your reaction from the various tribes, and they're looking for various things. This part of the game, I guess, was to teach kids diplomacy and investigating. So that's the adventure part. In the city itself, I guess the goal was to teach them economics. Both the exterior and the interior parts of the game, though, are very slow. Not a lot really happens. I couldn't get invested in the game because the graphics are distractingly terrible. Wasn't really sure what I was supposed to be doing. I found the interface not just slow, but also awkward and tedious to decipher these things and to drive around. I didn't really care about the crab stuff. And to be honest, I didn't even finish the game. So, total thumbs down. Then we fast forward. And I come across a copy, a PDF scanned copy of that novella by Jim Moreau. And the reason I grabbed it was partly because I wanted to see, well, you know, I had played part of the game, might as well read the story. And partly it's because I am actually a fan of Jim Moreau's writing. As a sci-fi writer, wrote a really good book called Towing Jehovah. I've read a couple of his things. And I like his style of writing. It's sort of weird that a guy who in the 90s was getting Hugo nominations would in the mid-80s be writing the novelization or accompanying novella for a children's video game. So I was interested to see what the writing was like. So I grabbed that, read it, short, 76 pages or so, and it completely transforms this game. Because just like the paragraph book the Wasteland game that I was talking about last episode, how they add so much rich texture and color to the game in your mind that it adds a whole extra and important element to the game. The same thing here. By reading this novella, it completely transforms the experience of playing the game. You care more about the beeliner. You understand more about what's going on. You understand what the heck is up with Smoke Bailey and what type of character he is. You're more invested in this search for the most amazing thing. You're more invested in the diplomacy with the aliens, and it just, it all makes much more sense. you need the graphics planted in your head by this novella to make this game an enjoyable thing. And again, it completely transformed it. It made me much more interested in playing the game again. I loaded it back up, grabbed my save game, and I ended up completing the game. I found the most amazing thing. And no, I won't tell you what it is. You got to play it yourself. So now I give it a thumbs up. I can see why young kids in the 80s found this such an enjoyable game. For me, though, it required the reading of this novella that's supposed to come with the game to make me invested in the world, in the characters, in the search. It completely transformed it and made it overall a very enjoyable experience. I wouldn't play it again. Graphics are, let's face it, the graphics are crappy. And well, the most amazing thing might move around. I'm not interested in searching for it a second time, but I'm very glad that I did play it the one time. One time through, I totally give it a thumbs up. If you want to play the game, I will put the discs and the PDF of the novella up on the monsterfeet.com website, so you can grab everything you need to play it, either through an emulator or on a vintage computer. And if you're interested in this sort of game, very gentle adventure for kids, mix of diplomacy and code breaking, then it's worth sitting down and playing. I give it a thumbs up, but only with the novella. So, well done, Spinnaker.
Damage, not too bad. A couple of the sensors are out, the fuel intake chambers are both flooded, and the left pilot seat doesn't go up and down anymore.
We came through that intact?
Starbug was built to last, sir. This old baby's crashed more times than a ZX-81.
So I want to take a quick second to thank my sponsor, which is Navis Pack and Ship. They specialize in shipping all the weird and hard to ship items. Basically, they solve shipping problems. So they do electronics and art and computer servers and photocopier returns and all the stuff that's sort of difficult to ship. Maybe you've got some furniture, but not enough to justify a full moving truck. Or maybe you have something that is electronic or too fragile or too valuable to just hand over to the post office, or too large once it's boxed or properly crated to go down a chute. You can't give it to a courier. You can't give it to USPS or up here, Canada Post. How do you ship it? You call Navis. They've got lots of information about their various services on their website, which is just gonavis.com, G-O-N-A-V-I-S.com. They offer pickup. They do custom crating and custom boxing. They do international paperwork. They'll pick up remotely and send things to you. Basically just solve any weird shipping problem you have. And I really thank them for their support. So again, if you've got a shipping problem, check them out at gonavis.com. So the last thing, I guess, for us to talk about is the Cartoon Head Cookie Jar. Last year's episode talked about Wasteland, and I had more people respond to that draw than any other. And it sort of makes sense because Wasteland is a ridiculously amazing game. Definitely one worth playing. Had a huge number of respondents to that. The first person whose email got randomly drawn, a fellow named Reginald, was excited to win the game, but then wrote me back a couple of days later to say, if I haven't sent it yet, don't send it. He had been talking about the game to his girlfriend, and his girlfriend went and found him a copy and gave it to him as an early birthday gift. So awesome, girlfriend or what? And awesome of Reggie to say that he had a copy and that I should therefore give the giveaway to a different person. So thumbs up to you, guy. Nice. So the second person I drew of the very large number of respondents, unfortunately, never wrote back. I wrote a bunch of times, but won't say your name just in case you're listening, but you lost out. So just before recording this, making another attempt at recording, I drew yet another name, and the winner is a fellow named Jerome, who I think is in Seattle. He hasn't responded yet, but I only just drew his name before recording, so I'll give him a few days before I draw a fourth name. So if your name is Jerome and you live in Seattle and you wrote into the contest, make sure you check your email and write back and let me know the address to which you would like me to send your copy of Wasteland. Now, for the next draw, of course, I have this copy of In Search of the Most Amazing Thing. I don't have the novella, which I have now just gone on and on about how it's vitally important. I'm going to try to track down a copy of the novella. I have a lead on one. So if I get that, I will include it. If I don't get that, I will simply print out the PDF that I have and I will make you you a booklet and make a note for you or something like that. Make it a little more personalized. So I'll do what I can. And if you would like to get a copy of In Search of the Most Amazing Thing, you get the box, you get all the documentation, you get either the original or, I think maybe even better, my handcrafted version of the novella and the Spinnaker catalog from 1983 and all that sort of thing. Everything you would need to experience the game firsthand on a vintage Apple II, then just send email to feedback@monsterfeet.com. Put anything you want in the title. I read these things. It's not done by computer. So maybe put cookie jar or draw or search of the most amazing thing or whatever. I read all the email that comes in, even though I don't always have time to respond. So I will save all the email that comes in. And right before the next show, I will randomly draw a name and the lucky winner will get this copy of In Search of the Most Amazing Thing. So as long as this is the latest podcast, there is still time to enter the draw. And hopefully I will hear from you and you'll win yourself a game. So thank you very much for listening to the latest podcast. Sorry it's taken me ages between the last episode and this one. I have a whole new setup now. Should, knock wood, allow me to get these things out with more frequency. But I have promised that before. And I don't think I'm going to fool you if I promise that again. So we'll just play it by ear. But for now, thank you very much for listening. And I will talk to you guys soon. You've been listening to 1 Megahertz, a Monster Feet production. All the links and show notes can be found at monsterfeet.com. You can get in touch by writing to feedback@monsterfeet.com. And like all Monster Feet productions, the original material in this podcast is released to the public domain.